Today on Rocking the Suburbs, it's time to close out Metallica Week.
Yes, for us, the bell tolls.
Yes, Mike, indeed, the bell does indeed toll for us. We've reached day five of Metallica Week. We've managed not to fall out, talking about some of the troublesome music that was released in day four. But before we go any further, I should introduce myself. I'm Stephen Routledge, and with me today is the one and only...
Mike Coley.
Who's fortunately has been with me all this week through... Metallica Week. If somehow you stumbled across day five and haven't heard days one to four, please go back and listen to them, because this will make a lot more sense if you do. And thanks to Jim and Patrick for letting us take over this week and talk about Metallica. So, well, we finished off yesterday, Mike, didn't we? We had some pretty bad Metallica music.
It was rough.
Some of the worst stuff of their entire career. And we finished up with Robert Trujillo joining the band, so they're back to replacing Jason Newsted. And after they released In Anger, they went out on tour and toured plenty. And in 2008, we got Death Magnetic. And to say that the critics' reaction to this was one of great relief and euphoria would be somewhat understating, I think, wouldn't it, Mike?
Yeah, absolutely. They got, you know, they hit the charts number one in the U.S. anyway.
Yeah, no, well, Sanger went to number one as well, Mike. So
true. Yeah. This,
in
yeah,
fact,
I guess
in fact, Sanger won a Grammy as well, unbelievably.
Oh, good Lord!
Talk about overcompensating, eh? but yes, and what the critics and indeed the fans, I think, particularly liked, this is a return back to the thrash days. You know, the alt rock stylings of Load and particularly Reload kind of jettisoned, and we're back to more, you know, what Metallica used to be. You know,
yeah, they kind of went back to their old formula, and the songs are all long still, and the album
yes.
is a little bit long as well.
It's too long. It's too long, as nearly all their albums are. You know, apart from really, you know, Ride and the first three certainly, anyway. But it's more a case, wasn't it, Mike, of and breathe.
Yeah,
when you hear it, and breathe. It's okay. Yes. We are going to get good music again from Metallica. Yes. So
the world is all right.
Yeah, let's for those like our friend Kevin who may have fallen off the wagon, Metallica. Let's listen to the opening track from Death Magnetic and see what we make of that.
We'll be right back.
That's classic Metallica sound. They're back.
Like they'd never been away, wasn't it? Yes, it's... I'd be interested to see what you think, Mike, overall, but I think the album was possibly slightly overpraised in hindsight, simply because everyone was just so relieved that Metallica was back as Metallica, after the 90s and then the St. Anger issues.
When it was first released, I was skeptical about it. I mean, I bought it anyways.
Of course.
And put it in, I was quite pleasantly surprised at what their sound was on this album. Yeah. But I do think it was a little overpraised a little bit.
Yeah, I think you're right, Mike. I think, but it's understandable because what we'd been through, particularly with Reload and St. Anger, was just so bad.
Yeah,
that it was like, man, is there? After St. Anger,
the bar couldn't get any lower.
Yeah, has this band got a future? Other than as a heritage act, just basically playing stuff from sort of the mid 90s and backwards, and this proved that they did have a life making good metal in the future. Much as Fleming Rasmussen paid the price for the production choices on and Justice for All, Bob Rock paid the price for the production choices on St. Anger.
Weren't there some fan petitions?
There was a petition online signed by thousands of fans asking the band not to let Bob Rock produce any more of their music, which I think is a little harsh on Bob Rock, because I think, again, much like Fleming Rasmussen,
he'll cry all the way to the bank.
Bob Rock does not need our sympathy. Yeah, he is a very wealthy man. He will never be short of work as a record producer, and not that he ever needs to work again. But, I think he somewhat unfairly carried the can for St. Anger. Yeah, it's not his fault that album came out like that, really. I mean, you can take some hit
ultimately, it falls on the band.
Yes, yeah. We know that all the final calls were made by Lars and James, so, But anyway, like I said, no tears need to be shed for Bob Rock. He's doing fine. More importantly, we needed to stop shedding tears about the state of Metallica and could enjoy, some thrash metal from Metallica again, basically. And like I say, I think we're kind of in agreement, Mike, that it's a little bit overpraised in hindsight, but there's some really good stuff on there. I would even say we get the Unforgiven 3, which I know you weren't particularly, and neither was I, particularly taken with the Unforgiven 2, but I think this works a lot better on this album. The Unforgiven 3.
It is better than 2, I will say that. But
yeah, I mean, it's not a career highlight for Ron, but it's a significant step up. Some of the lyrics throughout the whole album, again, are still a little bit, we've still got some of the therapy leftover stuff from James, but hey, we're just glad they came out the other side and rocking hard,
Exactly.
Well, for those who had given up on Metallica, let's give them a little snippet of The Day That Never Comes, and then we'll move on to what comes next, which, let's put it this way, had everyone worried that we'd maybe had a false dawn. We'll be right back. go, Mike. It's a bit more. You got bits of like One and Fade to Black, and even Mama Said almost in places in there, haven't you? In that one, and
yeah, a little bit.
The so yeah, we mentioned that Bob Rock didn't produce this. This was produced by Rick Rubin, who has of late got a reputation for resurrecting wayward careers. Most famously, obviously, with Johnny Cash. He'd with the American Recording Series albums, and from what I understand of Rick Rubin's working practice as a producer, it's basically just to get a band to connect with what they did at the start. Basically, you know, take you back to, you know, what
back to its roots. Yeah,
yeah. What made you want to make music in the first place as a group of individuals? You know, and go from that point. And yeah, and it clearly worked. You know, because certainly, as we said, this is a real return to form, if not quite the instant classic it was perhaps hailed upon its release. However, while we're talking about the production, there is one thing we have to touch on before we can move on, and that's the loudness wars. Are you familiar with the hoo-ha around that regarding Death
Magnetic? I have a passing knowledge of it.
Yeah, so with Death Magnetic is kind of the apogee of the loudness wars in terms of everything getting mastered louder and louder and more compressed so it would stand out on the radio. If you look at a music file of a song from the 70s, it's full of peaks and troughs, you know, whereas this was notably criticised for sounding too compressed because it was so loud. And until it was remastered for the streamings, the best audio quality version of Death Magnetic was actually the version that was in Metallica Rock Band, the game. Because it was mastered differently and it wasn't as heavily compressed. And I thought, was it really that bad? So what I did, Mike, when I was re-listening to this, I still got the original version that I ripped from the CD when I bought it. So I played that and then immediately played the remastered version from Tidal. And it is significantly quieter on the streaming.
I'll have to check that out because I do have the original CD still.
Yeah, if you compare as long as you listen to the remastered version. Yeah, so when they did it for the streaming, yeah, they mastered it better and it's not as loud. But yes, there was a bit of hoo-ha about just it being, well, everything being compressed up because it was pushed so too hard. But anyway,
I remember when all that was going down.
Yeah, it was a bit bizarre that the best audio files, yeah, people with good hi-fis were going around and getting the video game version of the album to listen to it. Anyway, so Metallica was back in 2008. So what happened in 2011 had everyone worried that actually we'd maybe been sold a pup and things were going, because things went really weird, didn't they, Mike?
Quite weird, quite weird.
Because in 2011, we get Lulu, which was an album that Metallica did with Lou Reed. Yeah, that's, you heard it right there, folks. Lou Reed and Metallica, the dream team you never knew you needed or wanted. In fact, you didn't. Working together.
We may have to ask Tim Hoffman's opinion on this. I think he did mention something about it.
Yes, I got a note that, yes, because actually long-term listeners will know that back on episode 1167, Mike Snyder was having a patron episode and he talked about Lulu with Jim and Patrick and maybe offered a reappraisement of it. And Tim Hoffman did indeed. I went back and found the Facebook post, and because I had it in my mind that Scott Parks loved Lulu. It's a sort of really weird thing that he would claim is good, you know, much like he thinks Landing on Water is good, you know. sorry, Scott. We love you really, man, but Landing on Water, come on. But it wasn't Scott's. But Tim Hoffman did have a comment about how he loved Lulu, and he echoed the viewpoint that David Bowie nonetheless put out, that Lulu will be considered a classic in the future.
Yeah, I've heard that.
Yeah, I'm sorry, David, and I'm sorry, Tim. I much like St. Anger, you know, we listen to it so that you guys don't have to. I did go back and listen to Lulu. My notes, Mike, let me read you my notes on Lulu. Please help me. Please help me. Make it stop. In the interviews for this, when to promote this, because everyone had the same reaction as us, like, what? Lou Reed and Metallica. I remember reading interviews with, I think it was either Kirk or Lars, probably Lars, talking about how the guys in Metallica were crying in the studio because they were so moved because of, you know, what Lou was doing with his lyrics. And it was like, Lars, we were crying when we heard it, but not for the same reason. So, yeah, if you want to hear more talk about Lulu, go back to episode 1167, and Jim and Patrick and Mike Snyder can guide you through that.
I came across a quote from Chuck Klosterman describing the album. He wrote, if the Red Hot Chili Peppers acoustically covered the 12 worst Primus songs for Starbucks, it would still be slightly better than this.
Yeah, it's a toss-up, which would you rather listen to least, Lulu or Metal Music Machine?
Lulu, you know? Lulu for sure.
Yeah, so anyway, we've spent more than enough time than it deserves, Mike. Let's move on to much better things, and Metallica's most recent album. So on current, we're probably due a new one, actually, because it's 2016's Hardwired to Self-Destruct. And for the first time on what is actually on a Metallica album, Metallica studio album that just produced just by Metallica, we get a double. I mean, they've been maxing out the format of the CD as much as they could, and finally we get a double album. Why don't we hear something from Hardwired to Self-Destruct, and then we can dive into it, Mike. Yeah.
All right.
Okay. Let's hit the title track to start. Actually, no, I'm going to play Atlas Rise, because I think we might fall foul of the family-friendly rules on Hardwired to Self-Destruct.
Yeah, you're right.
Fairly early on in the song, if I remember rightly. So let's skip to Atlas Rise, one of my favourites on the album.
Love that one.
It's great, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's fantastic.
It's not Master of Puppets, but it's close.
If you dropped it onto Master of Puppets, it wouldn't sound out of place, would it?
Not at all.
I think that track is the best thing they've done in a long time. What do you think about the album as a whole, though, Mike?
I haven't really dug too deeply into it, but everything I've listened to, I was like, yeah, we're back. This is two in a row, you know, discounting the Lulu album, which was, you know.
Yeah, it's a weird side project thing, yeah.
Two in a row, Metallica's back. I'm looking forward to what they come up with next.
Yes.
Because they're doing a lot of touring now. They've brought on some different opening bands on their later tours, you know, Arctic Monkeys, and they got Greta Van Fleet opening on their latest tour. So I'm curious to see if that will influence their sound going forward at all.
Yes, because, I mean, yeah, I know when they played, when they headlined Glastonbury a few years back, there was quite a lot of hoo-ha about them headlining Glastonbury, because this is not Monsters of Rock, what are Metallica doing at Glastonbury? But, you know, the thing is, they got enough songs They've got enough hits to play Glastonbury, basically.
Right. I mean, you know? They're not Metallica 1983. They're Metallica, yes. Rock and roll band.
Yeah, exactly. I think it didn't, the caveat that we have to apply to everything post Master of Puppets, it didn't need to be a double. If you cut out, I think, you know, Dream No More, Confusion, Here Comes Revenge, at least, you got an absolute banger. And there's some really good stuff on here. They say the title track, what we just heard, Atlas Rise, Moth Into Flame, Man Unkind, Robert does a bit of sort of Cliff style bass stuff on there, but especially as well, Mike, Spit Out the Bone, which is the closing track on the album, and man, it's good.
That's excellent.
I mean, again, you could drop it on any of the classic albums, it wouldn't feel out of place. So let's have a quick listen to a bit of Spit Out the Bone, and then we can wrap things up on Metallica Week.
Awesome.
It's telling that you're like, I don't even want to stop it. In the, you know, you can tell we really are back when it's going along, and you're like, no, I'm struggling to press pause again. You know,
that's classic Metallica right there.
It certainly is, yeah. And I think out of the, you know, I think if they just managed to make this a single one shorter, you know, it would be considered. Yeah, right up there with the early stuff, you know.
It wouldn't be Metallica without Bloat, though.
Well, I guess not, but yes. So definitely what I would say to those who fell off the Metallica train a long while ago, certainly go back and listen to Hardwired Self-Destruct, because there is a lot of really good stuff in there.
For sure. Yeah,
as you can hear from our reaction to it, you know, it's really good stuff. And, interesting to see what comes next, really, Mike, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, we did gloss over S&M 2, but that doesn't really give us anything that S&M 1 didn't. So we don't need to really dwell too much on that. I think we should just wrap up talking a little about sort of the band's legacy and influence. I know you wanted to mention about the Blacklist album, Mike.
The Blacklist album so that came out last year, and it was basically a bunch of current musicians from all across the musical spectrum covering songs from the Black album, and just the range of musicians on here. I mean, I don't even know if there's anybody on here that I would expected to be on here. Maybe Rodrigo or Gabriella.
Ghost, maybe.
Ghost, yeah, maybe Ghost. But, I mean, and Corey Taylor's on there. But yeah. You got a Jason Isbell in the 400 Unit did a great cover of Sad But True. I love the way he tackled that.
Mm-hmm. You got, I mean, My Morning Jacket's on there.
Yep. Phoebe Bridgers, one of the podcast favorites. She does a great version of what'd she do? Nothing Else Matters, I think. Yeah, Nothing Else Matters. And she's a Metallica fangirl. I saw a video on YouTube that where she interviewed Lars and talking about when she got into Metallica. I think the video came out right around the time this Blacklist came out. But definitely check that out. It's all over the place. I mean,
you got Phoebe Bridgers does Nothing Else Matters, but then you also got Miley Cyrus and Elton John.
And Yo-Yo Ma.
Yeah, exactly. So, yeah, I think it testifies to what you were saying, Mike, about, because Metallica became bigger than metal, they influenced far more bands than just people who are into metal. You know, everyone was exposed to Metallica's music in the early 90s. You couldn't avoid it. If you listened to any kind of music or watched any kind of music television, you would come across Metallica. So their influence is huge, and that's also why they're still playing stadiums to this day, you know.
Yeah.
And selling out stadiums to this day, you know, because they got this great catalogue, and it's just fantastic that they're back producing, high-quality thrash metal, you know.
And they are, so they just announced, I don't know, maybe a month ago or so, where they're doing a tribute show to John and Marcia Zazula down in Fort Lauderdale, Florida, where they're playing nothing but early tracks at this show. And they got Raven opening up for them, who they toured with on one of their first tours of the U.S. So that would be, and it's like a 4,000 person room they're playing too.
You're struggling. Yeah, good luck getting tickets for that.
Yeah, a friend of mine got a ticket, which shocked the heck out of me. I'm looking forward to seeing what he says about it. He's
he's not going to have an accident.
I may have to knock him over and steal his ticket.
He's last seen entering your basement and didn't return until after the show.
Sorry, Chris.
But the only one thing I just want to touch on really with the legacy before we wrap up, Mike, is what could they have achieved if, what would they have achieved if Dave Mustaine had stayed in the band and or, Cliff had never died? You just do wonder. Part of me thinks they never would have become the Metallica we know to this day.
No, I don't think so.
I think it's fairly obvious that, just from a musical point of view, you think, oh, if only Mustaine had stayed. Look at the great music that Mustaine has produced in his career.
But also, look at how many different bands he's had to put together.
Oh yeah,
Megadeth over those years. Yeah, so it's obvious. It's his.
Yeah,
project,
exactly. Yeah, they never could have lasted because the egos wouldn't work. But because Megadeth is basically, really, let's be honest, Dave Mustaine and whoever he feels like playing with at the time. But there's no doubt in the guy's talent.
Oh, he's definitely super talented.
As a guitarist and as a composer, what if Cliff hadn't died? Would they have ever become as big? Would he have kept them on a more sort of left field path than they ended up treading? In the 90s, but who knows? But we can only be grateful for the music we've got, and the fact that they're a band that justifies us doing Metallica Week, Mike.
Yeah, and they're still going 40 years strong.
Exactly. So, it's been great, Mike. To be honest, it's been really enjoyed chatting Metallica with you this week.
Oh, same, brother, same.
Yeah, it's only just under a month since we were actually hanging out together in the same room at Suburbs Fest, which was totally amazing, and I'm still not quite sure it really happened.
I have pictures to prove that it did happen.
Yeah.
I just need to get through them and send some your way.
Yeah, it's just, it still feels a little bit unreal, but it did happen. So anyway, we'll wrap it up and really just say thanks to Jim and Patrick for letting us take over the airwaves this week. If you've got anything you want to say about Metallica Week, please contact the show by emailing rock@suburbspod.com or it's at suburbspod on all the socials. You can contact me, Stephen Routledge, on Facebook, and you can get hold of Mike.
I'm at Mike Coley on Twitter and Mike Coley on Facebook, Coley with a K. I also have two radio shows on the Rock in the Suburbs radio platform. Saturdays from 11 to 1, the show is called Walking at a Suburban Pace. And that is just a freeform type show where I just play whatever the heck I feel like playing that week. And then I have a ska show on Tuesday nights called Marty's Ska from 7 o'clock to 8 p.m. Eastern Time. So check that out. Visit suburbsradio.com to get the schedule for all the fantastic DJs we have on the Rock in the Suburbs radio platform.
Yep, no, do that. And if you want to, the other thing you can do, of course, to contact the show, as our esteemed friend Echo Park Jimmy does, is you can call the Suburban Party line, which is 612-440-1984. And on that echo of the year that Ride the Lightning was released, we shall bid you a fond farewell, and thanks for sticking with us on Metallica Week.
Cheers.
Ready?